Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on property, the holy grail of law, right after this. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they have been banned from our public schools, our public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. And you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, wouldn't you say? Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. And they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. That's not separation of church and state, boys and girls, and there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. You know, every law is a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty to the law is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it works automatically just like AIDS, herpes, and VD work, which just happened to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's 417-273-4967. 4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about property. Property is the holy grail of Anglo-Saxon administration. In fact, it's the holy grail of law worldwide. It was the holy grail of the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. It's the holy grail of the Roman civil law. Property. So what is it? You know, would you recognize it if someone slapped you up alongside the head with some property? Would you know what you had? You know, beside a little pain and anguish, what you would have is an incorporeal or an incorporeal right. Well, what does that mean? Well, property can be either tangible or intangible. It means it's something you can see, feel, hear, taste, touch, and smell, or it may be none of the above. It's totally abstract. It's wrapped up in a right that you have. And if you knew what that right was, it would be property, and you could claim that right. All right, so now let's take a look at a couple of examples. One time in Boise, Idaho, the city council came up with a new plan. See, they had the Boise City Garbage Company. They charged $4.50 a month, I think it was, to haul your garbage away. That was a hell of a deal. You know, even back then, you know, in the 60s and 70s, you know, when money was worth a little more, $4.50 a month was pretty cheap. And every Tuesday, you put your garbage can out on the curb. So you had to, they wouldn't come into your yard now and take your garbage can, but you put your garbage can out. Monday night was your ritual, you know. And then Tuesday morning, 3 o'clock in the morning or something, you'd hear the garbage truck come by, and they're banging cans and making a lot of noise and wake you up, see. So the moral to the story was $4.50 a month. Every Tuesday, they pick up our garbage 52 times a year. God, it was a hell of a deal. Everybody was getting along real good. And then one day something came up. I don't know what the hell it was, but they said, we're going to turn this over to a private company called BFI. I don't know what BFI means. It's some kind of a mafia operation. It's worldwide, nationwide at least. And they're going to charge the same amount of money, $4.50. They didn't raise the rates. Going to pick your garbage up every Tuesday just exactly like it's always been picked up. But they put one little caveat to that. You see, under the old program, you could subscribe to the service or not. And there were some people that didn't subscribe to the Boise garbage service. I don't know why not. It was so cheap, so convenient, and it was so valuable. I don't know. You know, you could pay some money, and you could haul your garbage off to the garbage dump yourself, you know, if you wanted to. That's people that had garbage. Now, I guess not everybody has garbage. But garbage, you see, is a noxious refuse, like sewage and nuclear waste. I mean, it's something that threatens disease and safety and health and welfare of people. You can't have it. It's bad for you. Garbage is bad for you. Nuclear waste is bad for you. Radiation is bad for you. Sewage is bad for you. You want to get away from that. And so the new rule was everybody has to subscribe, whether you like it or not. We're going to have universal garbage service in Boise, Idaho. And boy, that caught my attention right away. I was an avid supporter of the voluntary garbage system, but when they came in with this mandatory, you're gonna do this or else, boy, I got real excited real soon. And so I stopped having garbage. Last week I had garbage, this week I got none. None, zero, zilch. So after I got rid of my garbage, all I had left was property. Property. Remember the Holy Grail of law. So I had this property. And I stored my property. And I had some empty glass jars. For instance, I'd empty out a jar of mayonnaise. And then I'd take the jar of mayonnaise and I'd put it out in my 30-gallon steel container. And then I would open a can of peas, you know, maybe it'd be Del Monte peas or something, and I'd empty those out. And then I had this can. This can was made out of metal, and that metal was steel, and those are recyclable. I don't know if you knew this or not, but there's outfits around, and they wanted you to recycle your glass and your cans and your newspapers. And so then I got real interested in gardening. And so instead of having garbage, I turned it into compost. I took what appeared to be garbage. That was the canned peas that I opened and didn't eat them all. And then, you know, you stick them in the refrigerator until they get a good crust of mold over the top of them. They turn blue in the refrigerator. I mean, you can't throw those out. You know, you can't throw them out, you know, until they get mold on them. So that's why we have refrigerators. That's why you can put your stuff in the refrigerator and get a good coating of mold, and then you take it out and you throw it out in the compost pile. That's what we do here. And so all of a sudden, I got no garbage anymore. Now, Monday night, I was so attached to the ritual that I took my property in my 30-gallon steel container by habit, and I stuck it out on the curb. And the first thing that happened, I went out there Monday about 10 o'clock, and all of my property was gone. I mean, the cans, the bottles, everything that I was storing so that I could recycle was gone. Boy, was I ticked off. Immediately, I went in the house, and I wrote a letter to the BFI people, you know, the new garbage company, and I complained. I said, wait a minute, hang on here, you guys. You stop doing that. Don't you take my property anymore. I don't have garbage. And I don't like your service, and since I don't have garbage anymore, for you to charge me $4.50 a month would be unjust enrichment. Write that down, children. Unjust enrichment. Very important term when we're dealing with property. I'm going to write it down right here. Unjust enrichment. It's an old common law term. It's against the law for people to unjustly enrich themselves. And so I wrote them a letter. They wrote me back a letter, and they cited the city ordinance. And they said, here's the law. You don't like it or lump it. And you know, you're just going to do like everybody else or else. See, I don't know what the or else was. But so I continued on with my quest of storing property in my 30-gallon steel container. So I put cans and bottles and all kinds of stuff in there. And I took my newspaper, and I put that on my compost pile. And I had a newspaper pile, you know, to recycle, you know, for the paper drive. And I had my cans and my bottles and all this. And the damn habit that you get into, you know, when you're doing something over and over and over, getting this habit. So every Monday night, I'd go out and take my property can, stick it out on the curb. 3 o'clock in the morning, here comes the BFI truck, relabeled instead of City of Boise Garbage Company. It's now the BFI Sanitation Company, see? And they'd steal my property, my cans and bottles and stuff that I had stored. I was storing them in there and getting them ready to take down to recycle, and darn, they'd come and take them. And so I wrote another letter off. I fired off, oh, hell, I must have fired off 7-8 letters and said, stop doing that. Stop taking my cans and bottles. That's not garbage. That's property. And then pretty soon after about, I wrote them several letters, but they only wrote me one back. I think they thought I was some kind of a crackpot, some kind of a nutcase, and they wouldn't even answer my letters. And this went on for some time, you know, and then, wouldn't you know it, then they sent me a bill. They're stealing my property, and then they sent me a bill. So I sent them a letter back, and boy, did I give them a piece of my mind, right? I told them, I said, now you're stealing my property, and if you don't quit doing that, I'm going to have to take legal action, and blah, blah, blah. So nothing happened for a long time. This went on for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 months, something like that. And one day my wife called me practically in tears. And she said the garbage company had called her, and they threatened her, and they were just nasty and mean. Hey, bill collectors get like that. They're just ornery. And so I said, well, did the guy leave a name and number? And so she said, yeah, and I took his name and number, and I called the BFI company, and I said, I'm George Gordon, and you called my wife. And she's in tears and she's crying. And I said to this guy, I said, don't ever call her again. If you got something to say, you call me. And I said, take this number down. I gave him a number. I said, now, son, what's your bitching life? And he said, you deadbeat so-and-so. You owe us $30 and you ain't paid. And if you don't pay, we're going to put a lien on your property. Most people, no. Most people would say, oh, no, don't put a lien on my property. I'll pay. And I said, you got to be kidding me. You're telling me that you're stealing my property. And then you turn, and then he said, garbage, we're the garbage company. I said, I don't have any damn garbage, son. Wake up. Smell the coffee here. No garbage. Garbage. We don't have none of that. Now, I do have cans and bottles, recyclable cans and bottles, which are property. And I'm telling you right now, lay off and don't steal my property anymore. Stop it. Well, the telephone conversation ended, and I'm sure that guy thought I was some kind of a fruitcake. And so, but I kept taking my cans and bottles and putting them in my 30-gallon galvanized container there alongside the garage. And then, darn, if habit just didn't get the best of me, it was kind of like old Flip Wilson, devil made me do it. I kept taking the can out, putting it on the curb, and I'd store it out there. Listen, I want to tell you why I did that. You see, I own the property out to the center line of the street. Did you understand that, Bob? I'm paying property taxes out to the center line of the street. Got a corner lot, too, so I'm paying the property tax out to the center line of two streets and out to the middle of the intersection. But the city has an easement there, and they called that North Roosevelt Street. And so on North Roosevelt, since that was my sidewalk out there, and since that was my property, I was storing my 30-gallon garbage can in various locations on my property. Sometimes I'd store it over next to the garage. Sometimes I'd store it out there next to the curb. And I told the garbage company to lay off, and they never did. Them thieving bastards, they just kept taking my cans and bottles, and they just, then what was worse, they kept sending me a bill. And this went on for a long time, and one day my secretary came in, and she said, there's a gentleman out here, like, okay. So I said, well, who is it? He said, well, it's Joe Pedroni from the BFI Garbage Company. I said, the garbage company, show him in. I wanted to give this guy a piece of my mind in the worst way. So I showed him in, sat him down, and said, hi, Joe, how are things going? And he says, well, things are going good. I said, how's business? And he says, it's always picking up. That's a good line. You know, it's always picking up. And so he had a bill, and he presented it to me, and he said, you owe us $36 and some change here, and I'm here to collect. And so I told him about my property can and told him what the story was, and he said, we're going to put a lien on your property. And I said, would you please? I said, the day you put a lien on my property, I'll have a damage, and when I have a damage, then we're going to litigate. And the litigation is going to be over whether or not you can steal my property out of my 30-gallon property container and call it garbage and take my property without condemnation, without notice, opportunity to defend, and a right for me to present witnesses in my defense. Now, that's what we're going to do here, Joe. And he thought I was mad. He thought I was a lunatic. And he told me what the statute was and what the laws and rules and regulations are. And I said, Joe, that statute, it's actually a city ordinance. I said, doesn't that use the word garbage? And he said, yeah. I said, Joe, look at my lips here. I learned this from, got this straight from old George Bush. You know, watch my lips. I don't have any garbage, Joe. Joe, we don't have garbage at 1205 North Roosevelt Street. And he asked me, he said, well, what do you do with your garbage? And I said, could you tell me what garbage is? And he says, yeah, it's empty tin cans and empty jars. And he said, it's spoiled food. I said, okay, here's what I do with spoiled food. I take it out the back door, and I got a pile up there called a compost pile. That's my compost pile, Joe, and you can't have it. It's my property. He says, what do you do with your jars? I said, I put them in a 30-gallon container, and they're my jars, and it's my property. And he said, what do you do with it on Monday night? So I store it out on the curb. And I've written you several letters, Joe, and I pulled out a file out of my desk drawer. I had a manila envelope with about, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 letters on it. And I said, now I've kept running correspondence. I've got a very carefully detailed record here, Joe, sent by certified mail. Somebody down in your office assigned for it. So I know you got it. You know, Joe left. And do you know them suckers? Every single week, continually, stole my property out of my 30-gallon property can. But they didn't send me any more bills. And they never put a lien on my house. You know that? See, this ordinance required BFI to pick up the garbage at every residence where there was a can on the curb. And they required every resident in the city of Boise to put a can on the curb with their garbage in it so that BFI could take it and charge them $4.50 a month to do it. And by God, that was a good ordinance and a good law for everybody that had garbage. But it's just that George Gordon didn't have any garbage anymore. That's all I'm here to tell you. If you got garbage, shut up, pay the bill. Now, if you don't have garbage, what do you have? And because if it's property, it's protected by law. If it's garbage, that's a crime. And you better pay and you better get rid of it. Well, I told that story one time to a young fellow down in Decatur, Alabama. And he reported to me that they had a similar law in Decatur, Alabama, and that they, too, required people to dispose of their garbage. Only this guy was a real fruitcake. I mean, this guy was... He didn't put his can out on the curb. He didn't put a can out at all. And they sent inspectors by to find out, what in the hell is this guy doing with his garbage? Because everybody has garbage. Having garbage is like having urine. Everybody has urine and feces, don't they? And this guy's got to be doing something with his urine and feces. And this guy's got to be doing something with his garbage. And we want it. And we're going to find out. Now, this guy was one of those ecological fruitcakes. This guy, he had several cans by his garage. And he had one can for colored bottles, and one can for clear bottles, and one can for aluminum cans, and another can for steel cans, and another pile over here for newspapers, and another pile for cardboard. I mean, this guy was a real fruitcake. Talk about green. I mean, he was like the Jolly Green Giant. And because of that, he didn't have any garbage. None. Zero. Zilch. Zero. Now, if you'll remember, on the telly, they'll have these ads on the telly quite often around here anyway. And it says, hey, listen, we've got these these recycling centers. And it says, bring your cans here, bring your bottles here, bring your newspaper here, bring your cardboard there, you know? Have you got anything like that? Because that's what they had down there in Decatur, and that's what this guy was doing. And so they came out there, and they actually wrote this guy a ticket and hauled him into court. And so he went into court, and he produced witnesses, evidence, and testimony to demonstrate that he didn't have 1 ounce of garbage in a year's time. Not an ounce. None. Zero. Zilch. This guy was clean, clean, clean. And so he won that case, and of course he didn't pay any garbage bill because he didn't have any garbage. Now, of course, most people, they don't care about that. They're not interested in doing battle with their governments because it takes too much time, effort, and energy. They like to spend their time writing letters to the editor and bitching about it. They don't like to really do anything about it. And you know, there aren't, once in a while, you'll run across some guy like the Decatur, Alabama student who said, you know, I think I've got a lot of property here. My property is valuable, and I don't have any garbage. And I don't need to subscribe to this garbage service if I don't have garbage. So I just thought I'd pass that on so that you too could get on the green bandwagon and stop having garbage. And the next time some big outfit like BFI or somebody wants to take you on and make an example out of you, why don't you learn how to take on BFI and make an example out of them? You know, it works both ways. Now, right along this line of garbage over here, There's another thing. They got a down in Los Angeles County. I was down there doing a seminar one day, and this guy came up to me and he said, I got a problem here with the health department. And I asked the guy, I said, are you sick? And he said, no, it's not that I'm sick. He said, the health department, you see, they came out and they wrote me this citation. And he showed me the citation, and it complained about a 1968 Chrysler town car that was jacked up on concrete blocks in his front yard. And they called it an abandoned vehicle. An abandoned vehicle. And it had a carpet draped over the top of it. And they called that rubbish. And he had a pile of boards over there that had fallen over, and they called that trash. They said that this guy had abandoned vehicles, rubbish, and trash all over his yard. And I asked this man, I said, why do you have this abandoned vehicle in your front yard? And he said, well, you see, when it wouldn't run anymore, I jacked it up and I took the parts off of it. And I said, could it be that that is a sculpture in your front yard, and that's a lawn ornament, and that you, at great expense, put it out there because you enjoy looking at a lawn ornament, like other people like looking at ceramic flamingos, or maybe they like looking at a wishing well, or maybe they like looking at a fish pond. Have you ever noticed, boys and girls, that in people's yards, they have all kinds of crazy stuff? I mean, I see people, I'm driving down the street, and I see these flamingos in the yard, I see wishing wells, I see all kinds of crap in their front yards. Isn't that rubbish and trash? It sure as hell looks like rubbish and trash to me. And that's what I told him. I said, now, I personally don't care much for 1968 Chrysler town cars jacked up on concrete blocks as an ornamental article in my front yard. But if that's what turns you on, and if that's what you want to spend your money on, to create lawn ornaments for beauty so that you can have happiness, remember? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Would you like to pursue happiness with a 1968 Chrysler town car jacked up on concrete blocks with a carpet stretched over the top of it? Is that what you call art? Okay. You know, whatever turns you on there, Buster. If that's what you like, you know, get after it. So I went over the thing. In fact, he invited me out, and I took a look at his front yard, and I said, oh, my God. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. Kind of reminded me of home. Hell, it's kind of like my place, where you've got, you know, abandoned cars here and there, and kind of touches up, you know, gives you a little feeling, you know, for rustic and in history and things like that. And then you got all this junk and, you know, stuff that you meant to move to some other location on your property, but you haven't got to it yet. And so it's sitting out here in the front yard. Here in the Ozarks, we kind of measure people, you know, by their wealth, you know. How many washers and dryers do you have in the front yard, and how many up on the porch? I was over at McCullough's the other day. He's got two refrigerators on the porch and one dryer. I don't know what happened to the washer. And he's got a couple of cars out in the front yard and two on the side. Got the goats running around in between them, keeping the grass down. that's over at McCullough's. Now, I don't know. You know, different people have different ideas as to how they want to decorate their property, what kind of lawn ornaments they like to have out there, what kind of animals. You know, in the city, most people want dogs and cats. Over here, McCullough's got two or three goats. I don't know. You know what turns you on? What is it that you like? Some people like cats and dogs. Some people like goats. You know? All right, so I said, well, why don't you write up an answer to this, and then let's go into court and let's argue this. So he did. He went in there, and he said, now, I've got a pile of lumber over here. Every single thing on the complaint he has to answer. Let me ask you this. Let's suppose that you went down to Home Depot, and you bought a unit of lumber, and they came out, and they delivered it, and you put it where? Where are you going to put it? Aren't you going to put it in your front yard? Okay. Now, sitting in your front yard, is a unit of lumber that's delivered today from Home Depot rubbish, trash, or garbage? Isn't that valuable building material? Well, if a unit of lumber that comes from Home Depot today is valuable building material, can you tell me why isn't a pile of lumber that you've had sitting here for the last 18 years a valuable pile of building material? What in the hell did you plan to do with that lumber, Bob? Didn't you plan to use it someday for some building project around the house? Why are you keeping that lumber out there in the front yard? Isn't it because it's too valuable to throw away? And that when you throw it away, you're going to need to go to Home Depot and buy some and have them deliver it? I mean, isn't that the purpose for lumber? That's not rubbish. That's not trash. That's valuable building supplies, for crying out loud. So he answered the complaint. He said, I don't have any rubbish or trash. I have valuable lumber, which is building supplies for remodeling my house. That's what it's for. It's why we buy it. It's why we have Home Depot and Lowe's. And then they complained about bricks. There was a story in there on their complaint about bricks and about concrete blocks. What do you use bricks and concrete blocks for? Is that rubbish and trash? I mean, the guy across the street must have complained about this guy's lawn ornaments and decorations. They complained about this abandoned vehicle. And he said, I don't have any abandoned vehicles. I have a sculpture in my front yard. I have a lawn ornament. It's a 1968 Chrysler Town Car. And I put the carpet on the top of it because it reminds me of morning, noon, and night. It's a sculpture. Now listen, your city probably spent thousands of your taxpayer dollars to have some lunatic from the city come out there and make some kind of a monstrosity that they stuck out in front of City Hall, for crying out loud. And they call that art. What in the hell's wrong with a 68 Chrysler Town Car with a carpet stretched across the top, sitting on concrete blocks, and call it morning, noon, and night? Well, why isn't that art? Furthermore, he did one more neat little trick. He went around in the neighborhood and he took pictures of other people's lawns and gardens and lawn ornaments. And wouldn't you know it, there were other people that had cars in their front yards and boards. And when you find pictures like that in your community, that says that this law is being arbitrarily and capriciously enforced against me. Furthermore, I don't have any abandoned vehicles. I only have artworks, sculptures, morning, noon, and night, lawn ornaments, building materials for remodeling my house. And you're seeking to take my property. You're seeking to condemn my property without just compensation. And so as a parting word, he said, listen, I think that if you want to take my lawn ornaments, my boards, my bricks, and my concrete blocks, and my carpet over the top of my lawn sculpture, and he put a price on there of $28,000, he said, if the city wants to condemn my property, that's what I want for it. Let's go litigate under eminent domain. And do you know, the health department came back and said, no, we don't think we want to mess with that. You know, as far as I know, down in Los Angeles, there's a guy down there, I don't remember his address now, but I assume he's still got a 1968 Chrysler Town Car sitting in his front yard with a carpet over the top, called morning, noon, and night. But it's not an abandoned vehicle, boys and girls. It's sculpture. It's artwork. It's property. And now, I have to remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not its 8 schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by pre-arrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. We should keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or even ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you're hearing on this program are mine or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. But if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about property, the holy grail of law, at least in Anglo-Saxon administration it is, always has been at least since Moses. There's another type of property, though, that is constantly attacked, and it is the abandoned vehicle, abandoned vehicles. I don't know why this is, but for some reason, people just have a thing about abandoned vehicles, or what they perceive to be an abandoned vehicle. And I agree that if you have an abandoned vehicle, you should get rid of that. I hate abandoned vehicles. They're an eyesore. They're ugly. And they may even be a hazard. I don't know. Now, on the other hand, you may have an antique automobile, or maybe a classic car, or maybe it's just plain property. There's a designation for each of these, and I had a student one time down in Lake Wales, Florida, Lake Wales, and I was down there in Lake Wales. I don't know what I was doing there exactly, but we're down there kind of dinking around, and I was doing my thing. And anyway, this man took me over to his house, and he showed me one of his prized possessions. It was a 1958 Chevrolet four-door Bel Air sedan. I mean, it was the biggest, ugliest Chevrolet ever put out by General Motors, the 58 model. Now, if he'd had a 57 or a 56, you know, he would have had some. If he'd had a Corvette or something intelligent. But a 58 Chevy? Oh, my God. Talk about ugly. That's got to be the ugliest piece of trash GM ever created. And there it was, sitting in his backyard, immobilized. It wouldn't run. And the city of Lake Wales had an ordinance that says that you can't have an abandoned vehicle on your property. I mean, hell, let alone out on the street. You know, it had to be in your garage, out of sight. You'd have to build a garage around this. No, he didn't. He was out in his backyard. And you know how neighbors are. When there's a law on the books, the neighbors have got to go test that law. So they called the car police, the abandoned vehicle police. And they came out and wrote him up. And they give you about 30 days to dispose of this 58 Chevrolet. So I said to the man, I said, now that's a pretty old car. It's been some years back, but you know, a 58 Chevy, even in 1990 or 85, was a pretty old car, classic. See, when they're 30 years old, they become classics. I don't know if you knew that or not, but, and so 68, 78, 88, this car was 30 years old. It was a classic 1958 Chevrolet, irrespective of the ugliness of it. It's still a classic. And I said, now look at this. Here's the city of Lake Wales, and they've passed a law here that says that you can't have this classic automobile unless it's running and registered. It has to be running and registered. I said, now, wait a minute. Do you want to drive this car on the streets? And he said, no. I said, does that car run? And he said, well, it runs if I want to make it run. I got to go out. I said, well, what you need to do here, you know, to comply with the ordinance and to keep this beautiful, classic 1958 Chevrolet automobile here in your backyard, I think we can solve this problem. First of all, it's a classic. It's 30 years old. You don't want to run this car on the public streets. So, therefore, you don't want to spend the money on the registration. Now, your labor is your property. Your money is your property, and here comes the city saying that you've got to spend this money and you've got to buy their product. Let's try this one on for size. Let's suppose some guy came along and said, hey, you've got to buy my television. Hey, you got to buy my air conditioner. What would you think of that? Can the state then come along and say, hey, you've got to buy my registration for a car that you've got on your own private property that you don't want to use on the public streets? And of course, they just had one little caveat. It's got to run. So I said, why don't you go get the thing running and then call Ranger Rick out here and listen to it run. And then he did. And Ranger Rick came out and it was running. He said, okay, you got one more thing. You got to get registration for it. And this guy said, no, I don't want to do that. So when they went into trial, he presented witnesses, evidence, and testimony. He said, I got this classic car. It runs. It's not an abandoned vehicle. And because it's a classic and I don't want to run it on the streets any more than I would want to take the Mona Lisa or to take Michelangelo's David out and use it on the streets. It's too valuable. It's too beautiful. It is a marvel to behold, and I just want to behold this marvel in my backyard. I don't want to drive it. And I don't want the state coming in here and compelling me to give up. I don't want the state coming in here and taking my life, my liberty, or my property without an eminent domain action. Now, if the state wants to take my car, I'm sure that the state needs it, and they certainly can buy it, and they put a price on it. If you want my car, pay me. Take the car, because that's what it's worth. Well, judge took a look at it and said, well, it's not an abandoned vehicle, and the state statute that requires, the city ordinance in this case, that requires that it be registered is unconstitutional. See how simple that is? But you see, for practical purposes, it doesn't really make any difference that the ordinance is unconstitutional, because, or that it's a taking without due process or equal protection of the law. Because look, 99.99% of the people will knuckle under and comply with that ordinance. It doesn't make any difference whether it's legal or illegal. The city ordinance can pass any law they want. You know, the city ordinance could come along and say, we are making it illegal and unlawful for you to attend Catholic church on Wednesday night. And you know, most of you people would stop going to church on Wednesday night. If the city passed an ordinance and said, you got to have red candles on a birthday cake for people that are over 40, you people would go buy red candles. You wouldn't go test that. Not for the two or three of you out there that want to test some of these, you know, I'm just passing it on so you can take it on. You know, if you like it, and if you don't like it, let it pass. Now, when it comes to these abandoned automobiles, like the Lawn Ornament in Los Angeles or the classic car in Lake Wales, Florida, I personally wouldn't want a 1958. But if I had a 57 Chevy sitting in my backyard and the city came along and said that they were going to take it away from me or punish me for having a piece of property that I really enjoyed. You know, that's like saying, oh, you've got the Mona Lisa. Well, we think that's a piece of rubbish and trash, and we demand that you get rid of that. Send it off to the garbage dump immediately. Send it out to the recycler. Oh, you've got David. Oh, you've got Michelangelo's sculpture of David. Oh, no, that's rubbish. That's trash. We insist that you dispose of that in the city landfill. What the hell's going on here? Haven't you people got brains to think with? What in the hell? If the government could tell you to get rid of your 58 Chevy, couldn't they tell you to get rid of your Mona Lisas and your Davids? How's that going to fly? Well, the answer is, they would say, well, the Mona Lisa is a valuable artwork. What the hell, isn't a 58 Chevy a valuable artwork? Well, it is if it's property. Now, if it's an abandoned vehicle, that's another story. And so your opponent comes in, and he keeps using the word abandoned vehicle. And every time he uses the word abandoned vehicle, you need to object. I object. We're not talking about abandoned vehicles. We're talking about a classic car. We're talking about property. How's that, boys and girls? But sometimes you're going to come to another problem, and that's the Salt Lake City junkyard. I had a student down in Salt Lake City one time. He had about 30 cars. Now, he wasn't in the city. He was out in the county, Salt Lake County. They've only got about 14 counties, I think, in the whole state. They're all big counties. And this guy's got 30. They weren't abandoned vehicles. He never claimed that they were abandoned vehicles, and the county didn't do that. They said he was running a junkyard. And the junkyards have to be licensed. And so this guy... He came to school, and so I explained this property thing to him, and I thought he had it down pretty well pat, you know. And he had about 30 cars, and his story, when he went into court to defend it, he said, I've got these 30 cars, but they're all property, and I'm saving those for my old age. I don't have a Social Security account number, and these old cars, by the time I retire at age 65, are going to be very old and very valuable. I believe that these 1937 and 42 and 56 automobiles are going to be worth a lot of money when I retire in the year 2000, and so I want to keep those. And so... the court was indulgent, and I said, well, that's fine. And one day, somebody came up and knocked on his door. And the guy said, I see that you've got a 1958 Volkswagen over there, and I need a part off of that Volkswagen car over there. And the guy said, well, what part do you need? And he said, I don't remember what it was, an alternator off of it or a door or a fender or something like that. And the guy said, well, let's go out and look. And so they went out and looked, and sure enough, there was a part on the car. And he said, yep, that fits fine. And he said, what do you want for that? And he said, well, $30. And so they took the part off, and the guy took the part, and he forked over $30. And right about that time, he said to the man, he said, you're under arrest for running a junkyard without a license. How do you like that? It's called an undercover agent, and that was a sting. You know, it's one thing to have cars sitting out there that are property. It's something else to be selling parts off of them. Hell, if you're selling parts off of them, well, then it must be a junkyard, ain't it? That's commerce. Ain't it? So, you know, let's wake up and smell the coffee here, kids. If you want 30 abandoned vehicles on your property, that's fine. You want to call them property, that's fine. But when you're selling parts off of them without a license, then that's running a junkyard without a license. Furthermore, that's commerce because you're dealing in unjust weights and balances called Federal Reserve notes. Now, let's see what would happen here if a guy came up to you and he said, I see you got a 1958 Volkswagen out there? Yes, sir, I do. And he said, are you selling parts? No, I don't sell any parts off of them because I don't have Social Security. And I'm a denizen. I'm a Hebrew, and I practice the Ten Commandment model. I don't deal in Federal Reserve notes. I deal in gold and silver coin. And I'm keeping those cars for my old age. Someday, those cars are going to be worth a lot, and I'll need it to retire on. And the guy says, I'd like to buy the alternator off that car. And you say, no, sir, that'd be running a pawn shop, a junkyard, and that's against the law. But I'll tell you what I would like to do. I would like to trade you my 1958 Volkswagen for 1 ounce of 4/9 fine gold. I would like to exchange one piece of property in my warehouse for another piece of property in my warehouse. And I don't want to make any commercial transactions. I don't want to enter commerce. I don't want to buy, sell, and trade. I don't want to buy and sell. But I do want to trade, and I want to trade property. You see, now, boys and girls, we've got a much different case before us. Do you have a right to property? Do you have a right to use that property? Do you have a right to trade that property? Absolutely. Do you have a right to buy and sell property without a license? No. No. Now you got rules and regulations, customs, usages, and practices. You got a civilized society. You got people that have to function in it. Some of those people are criminals, and they use Federal Reserve note dollars. No doubt about it. They practice commerce. That's fine. Government does that every day. But then, you know, government is a criminal institution to begin with, just like the mafia. And all this controversy that you see, you know, among the drug-dealing mafia and the drug-dealing government is just an argument over turf. That's all they're fighting over. You see, drugs are prohibited by God. It's witchcraft. Witchcraft is punishable by death. So the government selling drugs through Rexall and medical doctors is drug dealing. They call that legal. And then you got the mafia over here, and they're bringing in cocaine and marijuana and heroin from around the world, and they're selling it down on the street corner. That's called illegal. And the bitch in life over the drug trade is that the government, when they sell cocaine, marijuana, and heroin, they charge 6 times more than the mafia does. So the mafia has a competitive advantage, and they have more customers. And so they're arguing over turf is what the bottom line is. Both are criminal activities. You and I ought not to be participating in that kind of criminal activity to start with. Now, when we get down here to dealing with property versus abandoned vehicles or junkyards, if you're going to deal in junkyards and commercial and Federal Reserve notes, and you've got to follow the rules and the regulations that are set down by that mafia organization called government. If you're going to do business with the mafia, and you're going to buy and sell drugs, or you're going to buy and sell girls and women, or you're going to use the whorehouse, well, then you got to do business according to the rules and regulations that are set down by the mafia, or you're going to get into trouble. The better course of action for most of us is don't do business with either one of those criminal enterprises. Let's do business under the Ten Commandment model. And let's avoid doing business with government and criminal institutions like the mafia, and all of a sudden, all these problems disappear. And it disappears because of what we call unjust enrichment. You're not entitled to be enriched unjustly. Let's take a look at one more here, now that we've covered these abandoned vehicles, antique vehicles, and classic cars. Is an inheritance a right or a privilege? I knew a guy one time over in Duncan, Oklahoma, a guy by the name of Larry. Ran a library over there, hell of a nice guy. And he was a young man in his 30s, and his daddy had already died. He had a mama. She was living around, I think she lived in Duncan, Oklahoma. He had a couple of sisters. And his daddy had died. Now, his daddy had made a lot of money. His daddy was a banker in Duncan. And during the Depression years, he had foreclosed on a lot of property. And after World War II, that property turned out to be full of oil. And so here was the old man. He was in his 70s when this boy, Larry, was born. And the old man knew that he wasn't going to live to see this boy grow up to be an adult. So he created a trust. And he put $220 million in this trust. A lot of money. A lot of money for that time and age, time and day. And this boy, when he turned 21, was to receive $1 million. Out of the $220, he's going to get $1 million. And every year on his birthday, he would get $1 million until he was 30 years old. When he turned 30, he would receive $5 million for the 5 years between age 30 and 35. And he must marry and produce one male heir by age 35, or he would forfeit the $220 million inheritance. Did you get that? The old man has a young wife. He's made millions of dollars in the banking business, foreclosing on people that lost their property in the Depression after World War II. He turns around and he ends up with a lot of oil wells, a lot of oil money. He has this boy. The boy grows up. He knows that he's not going to see this boy grow up, so he creates a trust. And then in the trust, he writes up a requirement that the boy the boy produced one male heir by the time he's 35 years old. Now, most people get married by the time they're 23, 25, 26 years old, and it shouldn't be too much of a problem to produce a male heir by the time you're 35. You know, if you marry at 25, you get 10 years. You ought to have five or six kids, and, you know, one of them out of five or six ought to turn out to be a boy. When I met this guy, he was 33 years old and unmarried. He didn't have any male heirs. He had already spent $1 million a year on drugs, wild women, and fast cars every year from age 20 to 33. At age 30, he had received his $5 million, and by the time I met him, he'd already spent the $5 million, and he's flat-ass broke. But he married when he was 33, produced a female at age 34, didn't have a male heir by age 35, and lost the $220 million. Now, only a druggie could do that, wouldn't you think? The question always arises, is an inheritance a right? Do you have a property right in an inheritance? And the answer is no, it's a gift. There's an exception to that under the Mosaic Law, under the Ten Commandments. An inheritance to the firstborn son is a right. And a righteous man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, that's your grandchildren. And your female heirs, as they leave, heiresses are called, when they leave, they take their dowry. They receive a bride price, the father does, and then he gives his daughters a dowry when they leave. Their inheritance for a female is taken when they leave. Firstborn son stays home. He receives the lands and the lion's share of the chattels for the express purpose of taking care of the rest of the family, because he becomes the new patriarch of the family. Here's the young man who is the new patriarch, the new heir, the new patriarch to the family, and he's supposed to show some responsibility. His daddy lays this responsibility on him in order to receive the inheritance, and what does the young man do? He throws it away. And once it's gone, boys and girls, it's gone forever. And I'm sure that the charities that the money went to are eternally grateful that the young man spent his time, effort, and energy on drugs, fast cars, and wild women. He had a property right, and he threw it away. All right, we're out of time. Again, I'm going to have to give you a final reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and is heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.